Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on. Joining me here from this area of the galaxy is Elise McCombs, fellow makeup artist.
Yo.
Yo. I know her. And we got Daniel Nightmare Nerd Ryan.
Greetings, horror fanatics.
Yeah. And we're one of several people here to talk about the Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and 2010s, Jackie Chan. Alrighty, so the newest guest gets to go first. So, Elise, when did you start letting Jackie be on your radar to where you were just like, I'm going to check out everything he does, I don't care?
Oh. To be honest, it was the first time I watched the Jackie Chan Adventures animated series.
Oh, really? Nice.
I really actually love that. And on occasion, I do quote the grandfather. It's like, oh, one more thing.
One more thing. Nice. Yeah. And Daniel, how about yourself?
Definitely like late 90s, early 2000s, you know, he started gaining more prominence in the United States, like Rush Hour and the animated show, of course. He was a little on my radar already because I was a Bruce Lee fan.
Gotcha. Yeah, he appears briefly as a henchman who gets his neck snapped and like Enter the Dragon in the final awesome fight. But now that's very true. I mean, he was kind of always one of those. He was just mentioned by several people. Even those who didn't watch his movies knew who he was because he was just constantly showing up on talk shows. He appeared on SNL briefly, you know. It's just like, so, yeah, I was kind of in the same boat as you guys. I would see, you know, Jackie Chan Adventures part of it while, you know, flipping through the channels. And it was just always interesting how, you know, that was live action and animated, kind of like many personas who dedicated their likeness to a cartoon. And I pretty much, even though I hadn't even seen most of their movies, I kind of knew what their stick was. I knew that Bruce Lee was basically had ushered in a whole new wave of martial arts back in the 70s while dying prematurely. His son Brandon Lee was supposed to be the next, you know, well-served cup of tea, and life cut prematurely as well. And then, you know, Jet Li, no relation, you know. Even I knew there was no relation. I mean, the spelling was different. And, you know, that was around the time he's doing all these kinds of movies like Lethal Weapon 4 and Once Upon a Time in China is being reushered to the States. And, you know, he had other cult movies like The One and Romeo Must Die at around that same time. So I was like, okay. I'm aware that they got both a Hong Kong following and a U.S. following, and that everyone differs on what they like about them, let alone their films. But I know that they're hot shit right now. You know, just they're unlike any other kind of persona you're likely to see. And they're not. That's what separates them from all the, you know, direct to video, you know, karate guys. You know. It was definitely interesting with Jackie Chan, because, I mean, he didn't do too many R-rated movies, except on, like, earlier when he was first starting out and even recently. And, you know, Jet Li was definitely starring in more gritty PG-13 R-rated movies. And like you say, you know, I definitely saw Shanghai Noon on TV quite a lot because it was basically a Butch Cassidy, you know, parody. I think what really glued Jackie Chan to all of our senses was just that he was pretty well spoken, and he had just a rare kind of positivity to you. And even much like any, like when we talk Jim Carrey and all the other comedic performers, even if his movie was a waste of time, he kind of also kind of had that Leslie Nielsen factor where he's like, okay, well, I still thought that one moment that he did right there was pretty hysterical. You know? It was worth the suffering of the otherwise 90 minutes, you know? Just kind of had that general likeness to it. And fortunately, I never really got cheated out of watching his movies because they were on TV almost every day. Like, every channel. TNT, FX, USA, everybody was playing his movies. You know? And it helped that he was working for all the big studios, like, you know, Disney and, you know, Miramax and Sony and and Warner Brothers. So there you go. You know, four big ass studios right there. And hey, you know, no wonder. Well, what's a movie that really stands out to you? I'll let Elise go first.
Oh, I mean, I enjoy his Rush Hour immensely, but I think The One is one of my favorites that stands out.
The One is Jet Li.
Is it? My brain's not here.
I'm about to say, okay.
Sorry, I'm like trying to multitask and I broke a glass while I was out. And
it's all good. But yeah, so Rush Hour, just the camaraderie between him and Chris Tucker. And so when I saw that they were doing a TV show, I was like, what's the point? You know, no one went to those movies for the plot. They went to them for Chris Tucker's, you know, foul mouth rants and Jackie Chan's physical comedy. That was it, you know. Take those
true,
two away.
But, you got no but that was one of his really good ones where it was helping with the English, and his lines are, both of their lines are quoted enough.
Yeah, it's pretty well.
Especially, like, I think in 3 or 4, like, the reverse when they're in China, and he says in Chinese, do you speak Chinese? Like, Chris Tucker's like, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? And there was a reverse in that movie on that, and that was hilarious.
Yeah, you would occasionally see it spoofed kind of in like Eric Andre type Adult Swim type stuff. It definitely that interesting take on the East meets West formula. Daniel, do you have a particular movie that really just you treasure?
Would have to be the Drunken Master movies.
Oh, absolutely. And lately I've seen forums talk smack about Part 2, and I'm like, What's wrong with Part 2? Part 2 is just brutal.
Yeah, it's sort of like Rush Hour in that it really highlights that beyond being just a, like, beyond human martial artist, he really is a master at physical comedy.
Yeah, and I mean, just how he just sprays the henchmen with what he's just drinking, and then, you know, some of them are near, you know, batons with fire, so it's just a very creative endeavor that we're talking right there. The factory fight is a lot of fun because, you know, he's having to, you know, jump up and kick the guys while, you know, falling back on all this hot, you know, coal. It's like, it's just extravagant to see. It's just, you can't take your eyes off it.
Yeah, and he totally grasped with those films that it's all about going bigger and bigger and more over the top and more crazy. Like I said, physical comedy. And in all honesty, I could not have seen Bruce Lee doing that kind of stuff.
No, not at all. I think
he just was so determined to be a serious star, he would not have been willing to do comedy like that.
No, not at all. He just saw how hostile the workplace and American tension was towards, you know, Asian Americans. And so, Jackie, well, I'll even build on that a bit. It's kind of interesting in that movie, you know, other movies, he's kind of the star and everyone else, you know, they were just getting whatever popular pop singer or B-movie actor from across, you know, from internationally they could conjure up in the future to be his co-stars. And that one, it was interesting, you know, because, you know, he's still kind of going between slightly before he goes to America. But with that one, it's interesting because he's not just carrying a movie. He has plenty of other colorful co-stars that are also kind of getting in on the action as well, let alone the violent second half. And so it's interesting there how he's kind of just transitioning the rest of the movie and they're still going along with him for the ride. Like, Jackie, what are you doing? Yeah. One movie that I think doesn't get noted enough, it like went to theaters like in other countries, but it only, I think it premiered first on HBO. And it was Who Am I? Did anyone ever see that one?
No, I don't think I know that one. I heard of it.
It definitely has a wacky fire escape type Die Hard parody at like the very end. But it's interesting because it's kind of his send up of Ronin type spy movies at around that same time. And he does get to do some funny gags. And the rest of it is just kind of car stunts. But I mean, I got to applaud how he kind of handles the ever-changing tone of that movie, because it's kind of a, it's an uncanny movie, and its surprises are what make it stand out, as opposed to, you know, other movies he did, which just had a mediocre shift in tone, you know, where they just were like, we want you to just carry it as long as you get it done on time. And this one was just kind of just a funny, it's like, I literally don't know who I am, but I can do all these cool, you know, tree climbing, and, you know, I know who all these guys in black suits and their names and everything, and I know they're trying to kill me. It's kind of a Manchurian candidate if it were funny. Instead of just, you know, if you did it nowadays, it would just be a very mediocre, you know, Born Identity, James Bond type comedy. And he fortunately didn't go that way with it. I don't think he can do any wrong at this point. The Foreigner was such a surprise because it was kind of advertised as a Patriot Games kind of Taken kind of movie. And that one, he really did get to go emotional. Not a single laugh uttered from him in that one. And it was okay because he was really comfortable going there. And playing off of Pierce Brosnan. So that was pretty cool. What would you like to see him do in the future, even though he's kind of getting up there?
Probably like what he did with Kung Fu Panda, a bit more voice work.
Gotcha.
Yes, I'm totally with you there.
And if he would be up for it, probably like more video games. Like, I could totally see Jackie Chan as a character in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they haven't already.
Good point. I think he'd be a natural, either Drunken Master or Leave Rush Hour. Or
that would be interesting, because I mean, they did a Bruce Lee type game where you play through like levels based off all four of his movies for like Xbox, and I know there was a Jackie Chan game in like PlayStation 1 level where it was like kind of playing on his persona. It had a lot of levels that were kind of inspired by Rumble in the Bronx and Jackie Chan Adventures, and I remember a lot of people saying it was a fun game. I would definitely be down for that, because like you say, it would, I mean, most of his movies you could probably, you know, find a loophole and say they're under Sony or Disney through a contract level, and they wouldn't even necessarily need to be inspired by that. They could just kind of be, or they could be inspired by it. They would just, you know, you couldn't refer to him as the exact name, like Inspector Lee. They could just have something. I'm Jackie Chan. I'm traveling. I'm an inspector. that's definitely the more realistic one way to go. He's appeared in some very wacky ads. And who would have guessed that he's a singer, you know?
Yeah, one of my favorite things is to listen to him do Make a Man Out of You from Mulan.
And yeah.
It's amazing.
That. He's like part of the chorus on that. I think it was like the 2011 or 2012, there was like Olympics or something, and he was like a surprise guest there, I remember. And I'll never forget, because my grandmother, who was ailing at that point from bone cancer, just called me up and was just like, you gotta look at it now, your guy Jackie, he's on there, you know. I'm not crazy about his movies, but I just love the man. He's just great persona. And I was just like, okay, cool, I'll check that out. That's something else. Who knew that, you know, he was still singing? I thought it was just only like something he did like when he was doing press releases or talk shows in Hong Kong. But it's like, no, he can sing. And he apparently, for the Hong Kong release of The Foreigner, he did do a recent music video where he's just, and it's showing him in the voice booth, and he's like, damn, the range on that dude. Just kind of like how we talked about Antonio Banderas here on the show, is like kind of an underrated, underappreciated singer. But yeah, no, like you say, I think he can't do any wrong at this point. It's kind of more interesting also how he's kind of a comedy icon. He's not just an action star. He is a legit, everyone's just like looking forward to seeing him do some gags. And sometimes some studios would kind of rip him off by saying, you know, inspired or produced by Jackie Chan. And Jackie Chan was like, I had nothing to do with that. You know, just, I worked with them. That was as loose as we got connected.
He's basically inspired a whole generation of martial arts films.
Absolutely. Stephen Chow basically owes his career to him. Did anyone ever see, I think I even asked before, if anyone saw The Forbidden Kingdom?
No, I have not.
Okay, yeah. Well, that was just a dream. That was actually probably one of the few Jackie Chan movies I actually saw in the theater, because, I mean, how could I miss it? I mean, you had him and Jet Li teaming up together in a total throwback. He's still basically playing the drunken master type persona, while Jet Li's kind of playing a monk version of his, you know, Feng Shaiyuk or Once Upon a Time in China type character, which is even more kind of wild, because his Li's Once Upon a Time in China character is supposed to be based on like the same historical legend that the drunken master is based on. So yeah. That it really was just a love letter to those kinds of movies, while adding a fantasy twist, you know, for the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon type crowd, without being overburdened with, you know, bad CGI or anything. It was really done with a lot of care, and I think it definitely made a lot of people's best, you know, action films of that year, you know, 2008 lists, because, I mean, it really utilized them well. All the fights and comedic gags landed, and a bunch of the unknown actors were well intersected. It kind of plays on that whole kind of reincarnation in a way, or ancestry kind of folklore, because, I mean, Jackie even plays in the real world segment a totally different man who gets killed at the beginning, before, you know, the main, you know, Western American hero, you know, gets transformed into this timeline, you know, that is a fantasy world. And it kind of reminds me of that other 90s cult movie, Warriors of Virtue. So it was like, that was a perfect kind of blending in of just, it landed, it found an audience in every single way, you know. It's like, that's what you gotta do with movies like these nowadays. You gotta do a send up of the greatest hits, you know? And so it's kind of like when we watch, you know, some of these John Wick movies, they will legit blend in a lot of kind of the Sin City Collateral kind of look, as well as, you know, some Enter the Dragon type, you know, maze of henchmen being killed off. And so it's still kind of an acquired thing that needs to be put into some of these upcoming martial arts films. And some people still don't get it, and some of them really do legit get it, you know? So it's going to be interesting seeing how the market keeps changing, especially in a post-corona age. So if anyone else has any other points they want to add to Jackie, I mean, if not, I can wrap it up here.
I think it's been said.
All right. Okay, Alisi, do you have any theater shows or any other film projects you'd like to promote?
Unfortunately, no. My real life has been taking over a little bit, but I'm slowly trying to get back into it at the moment. So, but I'm hoping at some point I'm trying to get my portfolio, English, I do not speak it, some on voice work and try to get some of my voice out there to do some kooky characters on like voices.com.
I would be slowly so down. I'll definitely get you as a voice in one of these film projects in the future if they had ever starts up. But I could see you totally working for the Funimation studio in like Louisville.
Yeah, I've auditioned once, but hard. You know, so many people audition. It's like you got to go and audition like every like 3 or 4 months just to.
I mean, unless you get some kind of agent, which is hard because you got to have some kind of body of work, it's going to be not going to be easy.
Tell me about it.
No. So yeah, but... Daniel, what have you been up to?
Well, I neglected my feed for the last couple of weeks. I've been in kind of a malaise and also just really, really busy. But got some stuff coming up that should be fun.
Okay, perfect. Set for life. So, thank you all for being on this. And
thank you so much for having us.
For having me.
Movies are these days, like seeing these superheroes and these real life things, like that was all from comic books. But for us, at least I always thought for me, my superheroes were people like Jet Li and Jackie Chan. You know, watching these guys fight off all these goons when they would come running at him with these amazing moves. And, of course, Jackie Chan was, you know, really made a name for himself with his ability to tie in slapstick and comedy, but also choreograph action more smoothly than, you know, a figure skater on ice, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we're here with Nick Denton, by the way, guys. And we'll
oh, yeah, we're already into the conversation. That's right.
All good.
Hello there. Thanks for having me on, by the way, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's very true. I mean, I definitely always got a superhero vibe from Jackie because he just, I mean, just seeing any of his movies, Rumble in the Bronx and the other stuff, is just, he defied death multiple times. It's like, no, all good. And it did kind of bring a different modus operandi to not only physical comedians, but action stars, because, you know, no longer are we having to see, you know, a six pack on the actor.
Yeah. Now
it's just like they're defying gravity, but they literally are defying gravity. You know, they're with without wires. He can do it.
Dude, Police Story, he almost died making that movie. Remember that movie?
Absolutely.
My God, what do they call it? They call the final scene, that's famously called Glass Story.
Right.
How much glass they use. And there's so many stunts in that where you're watching it, and if some normal person came up to you that goes, hey, what would happen if I tried that? I would just, you're dead. That's what would happen. If you tried that, you'd be dead. Because he did so many stunts that almost killed him just for that one freaking movie.
Yeah, and China, I mean, people still forget. They're even to this day, they're having to do write-offs where it's like, yeah, like 50 horses died, but no sweat. It was in a country where that law doesn't apply, you know? And,
yeah. You know, yeah. And oh my God, happens. I forgot about that. That's so true.
It's like rights, insurance. I'll get back to you. It's just like,
yeah, well, that's why, isn't that why he formed his own stunt school? Because nobody would insure him.
Absolutely, and some of the best stuntmen who are on Hollywood productions, like, you've seen them in basically everything, like Big Trouble in Little China, Showdown in Little Tokyo, yeah. Yep. Those kinds of movies, Simon Rhee, and
He started in 1962. That's when he was an extra.
Yeah, he did some porn, and he basically had to just do any kind of low. But then he was able to, like you say, star in some Filipino work and Hong Kong stuff, and just slowly keep getting recognized. Like, this dude, he shows up. He's awesome.
Yep. I think the first one that really put him on the map, I believe, was Drunken Master, wasn't it?
I think so. He had already been part of the stunt crew on Enter the Dragon, getting his neck snapped by Bruce Lee.
That's right. I love that. I showed my son that clip.
And, oh, really?
Well, because he knew who Jackie Chan was. I had this moment with my lady where I was like, I was talking to our son, and I'm like, so Jackson, and you know, he's not my actual biological son. He's not, not his father, I'm his dad. That's how it works. But I ask him, and I go, so Bruce Lee, and he's like, who's Bruce Lee? And I'm like, and she's like, I'm sorry, he knows who Jackie Chan is. And I'm like, okay, that's forgiven. So I showed him that clip, and I go, do you recognize? And I pause it right before he does the whole part. I go, do you recognize that guy? And he's like, is that Jackie Chan? And I go, this is where he started.
That's perfect.
So yeah, it's so fun that he's only six and he knows who Jackie Chan is.
That's wild. And I think that helps that a lot of his movies of all kinds have just been on cable TV. Like I was saying earlier, it's like, I couldn't go one weekend without someone playing
movies. Oh, yeah.
Well, FX in the morning, TNT at night.
Yeah, is there a more recognizable face in Hollywood? That's a serious question. When you think
about it. That's a good question, yeah. For someone of the 80s to today, I think you could definitely put him alongside maybe someone like Eddie Murphy, maybe and Leslie Nielsen in terms of comedians who span that time frame. And then you could probably, for movie stars, you could probably get some of the more serious actors like Clint Eastwood, Harrison Ford, and then, you know, the A-listers like Julia Roberts and Tom Cruise. But yeah, no, that's true.
But no, here's my next point. On an international scale, is there an actor more people know? I personally don't think so.
That's true, because I mean, he's conquered all kinds of scenes, the kung fu scene, comedy
scene. Doesn't he speak like five or six languages?
I would not be surprised. I would have to Google that, but I mean, he's definitely an international icon. He is the kind of guy, and people legit love him as a person. They see what kind of charity stuff he does.
Oh, he is one of the most charitable people on the planet. Like, he would be so much wealthier if he wasn't. And he's still worth, like, you know, almost $500 million.
Yeah, he doesn't have to work
so much away to charity. It's unbelievable. But, like, yeah, I really couldn't think of anybody when you say Jackie Chan who wouldn't know who he is, because he's been in film. Yeah, he started in 62. Next year, that means he would have been in film for 50 years.
Right.
50 years on television. There are so many people who know who he is. You know,
he's not even bragging.
Go to like the middle of nowhere in Africa, and they'll be like, you know, what Jackie Chan? You'll be like, yeah, him. Like, that's how famous he is, I believe. Because everybody can watch him. His fight scenes weren't like Zack Snyder or anything. You know, there's not like slow motion of someone's skull coming undone. He just does these really slapstick type deals. You can show any kid a Jackie Chan fight scene from, especially from movies like Shanghai Noon or Rush Hour, because that's all just punching and kicking and this amazing stunt work that he does.
That's so true too. He had it pretty good. He was able to even, he had such a big built-in fan base and people who were even forgiving or loved his persona so much, they would watch any kind of movie, even if it was a lesser material. And so when it got to the 90s ending and the 2000s being immersed and everyone's familiar with his new and old work, through, you know, Dimension Films and
Sony.
And it's interesting. And just, again, everything, every other channel airing his kinds of movies, it was interesting how he was able to kind of still just break through the mold of, well, you know, it's not my fault if some producer comes in and decides to hack this up, you know, Matrix or Equilibrium style. There will still be some good fights despite some crappy edits in between, you know, or the Hong Kong version is longer, so get that.
Well, I think his approach was always, okay, if you're going to do that, people are going to come see me just to watch those fight scenes. You're going to see how valuable I am, because you're going to read the, everybody reads reviews. That's, look, come on. Any big corporate, oh, I don't read reviews. I don't, but you're full of crap. Your ego is the biggest you have, and you love it being stroked. So when they see these reviews of Jackie Chan is amazing, go for his stunt work, but everything else sucks high tech, they're going to be like, oh, okay, this is a problem.
Absolutely. There's this new movie he just did with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and basically,
oh my god, dude, I saw that commercial. Did you watch that movie?
Not yet. And basically,
I want to see Arnold just. I want to see it.
Oh yeah, I'll totally scroll through it if it's on Tubi or Prime.
Oh, you're kidding me, dude? I'm in Arizona where it's legal, so just light up a fat joint and just that's what you do with that situation. You know, you just inhale that, sit down, and watch that kind of movie, because you're not supposed to think in those movies.
Absolutely not. And I mean, I grew up with Elvira, Mystery Science Theater, so I mean, I'm cool with a goofy drive-in antenna channel worthy movie, because I mean, that's how you discover some of those gems. And I mean, I've heard virtually no one liked this one, because basically it's like the Russian company that was behind it wasn't well experienced with computer graphics, let alone set design and everything. So, but that's
just, that's the point. You're rushing it. We are rushing Russia.
Okay, there you go. I mean, the incompetence level is already a star in and of itself. That makes me want to see it more.
That's when people say, like, no, that's what makes it horrible. Like, oh god, you're making me want to watch it more, man.
Right? It's like, I'm going to start putting this at the party just to make you leave if you're going to be...
Now I know your weakness, and I know what I can stomach, so let's go, you and me, buddy, Sharknado 3.
Sharknado 3, Hard Rock Zombies.
Yeah. Let's do it. What, Frankenfish?
Frankenfish, perfect. Any of those Sci-Fi Channel movies, that's the fun.
Exactly. But anywho, like, okay, so here's a question for you. Favorite Jackie Chan movie growing up?
So hard.
It is difficult. I know. It's a difficult question. All right. If you can't think of one, just like name off a couple or like three.
Oh, I know.
There really are so many.
My family's going to probably say Shanghai Noon or Rumble in the Bronx. I'm going to go with Drunken Master 2. It's just.
That's one with the coal pit and the fight scene, right?
That's the one. The second one.
Yeah, that whole scene is just what he did in that whole. That was his real life bodyguard. By the way, I don't know if you knew that, or not. But the dude who would the dude who could kick like a video game. That was just.
I knew he was.
That was at a Street Fighter, man. That was, I remember watching that scene and him kick around, because my main martial art was Taekwondo, which is 70% your feet. I'm watching this and I felt like, you know, I felt like I had arthritis in my legs because of how not flexible I felt compared to watching that scene. He
right?
The skill and the muscle and the control to be able to kick that hard, that fast, and that smoothly, it's hard to comprehend, man. It truly is. And that scene where he kicks him and he falls backwards over the coals and he burns himself, you know that scene?
Yeah, I mean, and you're seeing all the burns rip through his actual shirt. And
he shot it three times.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right.
He didn't like the first shot. They call him apparently he's like the perfectionist. He didn't like the first shot. So he fell backwards through the burning coals two more times until he got the shot that he liked. And he suffered like second degree burns all over his freaking hands and legs and glutes too. And like, Are you serious? But what did we get? We got one of the craziest stunts done on a scene probably ever done. And it would, that would never happen these days. Nobody would ever allow that.
Right? Well, it wasn't... was that on the Tai Sing DVD where they had like some special features, or was that a different remaster recently for like Blu-ray? Because I think they've done some different versions of it where they have all these special features that talk about that with commentary.
Yeah. No, that was just going down a wormhole of YouTube one night when I was in college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, finding out that information because, you know, yeah, like one of the most relatable bits I remember from comedy was from Bill Burr when he goes, I don't get how YouTube works. I started watching one video and 4 hours later, I'm watching people getting bit by poisonous snakes. Oh,
sorry, I forgot to tell him. Danger Will Robinson.
Yeah. Anywho, what I love is he knows that that's his ringtone. It always cracks the family up. So because it was also the same for my family lawyer. That was the same sounding ringtone for our grandson. But anywho, bad. Sorry, got sidetracked there. Yeah, man. I'd say for me, as a kid growing up, no movie I honestly enjoyed watching more than Shanghai Noon. Especially that scene with the horseshoe that he does with the when he ties the rope to the horseshoe and just takes out all those dudes.
Yeah. I mean, more or less. I mean, it's definitely. I mean, that there was like two people for like the final stunt fight in that. I mean, Ken Lo and then this other guy who had been doing stunts for the Mortal Kombat video games, let alone Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah. So.
And I know he was like South Korean or something. So, yeah, it's definitely like you say. I mean, if you have to pick even 10 movies, it's already going to be very hard because even if those movies don't have all that interesting a plot in between the fighting, there's just some kind of nostalgia about it. I mean, Project A is interesting.
Project A is an awesome one.
I mean, because. That one sets up for all his other spy adventures, whether it's The Foreigner or Operation Condor, which is known as like Operation of God or something like that. But yeah, Project A was interesting because that also establishes his friendship with stunt performer and martial artist Sammo Hung.
Dude, Sammo Hung, I also love. Him and Donnie Yen, that whole...
Yeah.
That their most recent film they did together, the second Ip Man. I think that was the most recent one. But their whole thing from Ip Man 2, from their fight scene on the table to the, I mean, that movie is phenomenal. And seeing those two still do what they can do all these years later was just amazing to watch.
That is wild. And I mean, to have that established a friendship, let alone an own established career. Sammo only seems to be, I think he basically only got big here because he kind of copied the Rush Hour stick to his show Martial Law.
Yeah.
And only hardcore Americans like us, you know, follow Hong Kong stuff. And yeah, Donnie Yen is also kind of the second one who kind of broke the mold of just being an international icon. And, you know, whether you were familiar with just his 90s work or his 2000s work, like Killzone. And I mean, it helped that he was in
the two that he did with Jet Li, that famous fight scene in All the Bamboo.
Yeah. Once Upon a Time in China 2.
Yeah, thank you. That's what they were. And then like the nostalgia I got all those years later when they face off in Hero.
Yeah. And I mean, follow that up with, you know, Shanghai Nights, which has the Hong Kong.
Man, like I remember. Yeah, I know exactly where you're going. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
The Hong Kong version has an even more uncut version of that fight, but of that American movie. But yeah, then to be in Highlander 4 still stand out despite the bad editing by the producers. Blade 2 and Star Wars Rogue One, and then even the lesser Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Sequel, you know, just he's always doing something, whether it's his own shtick, his own franchise, or appearing in someone else's franchise and just making it better. And
absolutely.
Even in the
Triple
X Free, he was the best part.
by a mile. Oh, Lord. Holy cow. I did. Whew. I was almost like, we got any painkillers in this house? That was. The other thing, too, is like, but here's the thing is like, what do you think those guys would have been able to get to those spots without Jackie Chan?
Right?
Yeah. Like, he did. So, you know, his story is almost like Schwarzenegger's, with how Schwarzenegger was like, he got famous for lifting weights. You know, like, there's so many people that do lift weights, but he made it entertaining. You know, he got, you know, then he did real estate. He married a Kennedy. He became the biggest action star. Like, Jackie Chan was so poor, his parents had to borrow money just so they could go to the doctor in China. And
yeah.
And to see him go from that to like an extra in the early 60s to where he is now. He's also a classically trained opera singer. You know, and he sings in Cantonese and in Mandarin, which is, you know, Chinese is alone an incredibly difficult language. I mean, when you have 4,000 years to develop it or more, it makes sense because it has so much time to change. But the fact that he can speak Cantonese and he can speak English and he can speak Chinese, because do you know how Chinese works tone-wise? I imagine so from all the movies you've watched. Or like the actual language itself. Do you know what I mean by the tones?
Basically, probably the movie that really did introduce me to just kind of the culture of it was definitely Once Upon a Time in China, I think.
Because,
I mean, that gave me an idea of the Dynasty era, even the first Fang Saiyuk. Jet Li's movies are definitely where you go to if you want some kind of semblance. Yep. So.
Yeah,
it's
really wants that really old touch. But yeah. Oh,
he does another great movie. I forgot. He also even directed it. I know we're going a little off topic into Jet Li, but his Born to Defense really was pretty inspiring to me because he's basically doing his version of On the Waterfront.
Jet Li directed that?
Yeah, Born to Defense from 1986. Wow. But I was intrigued by it because, you know, it's set during the World War II takeover of China by Japan. And so to sneak in that kind of social history that's not talked about as much, you know, instead, you know, World War II, we like to talk about, oh, Pearl Harbor, you know, Hitler, you know, we only talk about that. We don't talk about all the other areas.
It was a world war, not two countries war.
Right.
So there's a lot to all that.
Brainwashing there, yeah.
Yeah, no, the movie I feel with Jackie Chan though that really does kind of take or kind of get tucked into the back comparatively because of movies like Rush Hour and Shanghai Noon and all those was Rumble in the Bronx. Because when that first came out, that's what introduced people to Jackie Chan in America.
Absolutely. You know?
And they were like, holy crap, this guy is something else, man. Because you get to like how me, I was around the time when Rush Hour came out. And then you also had other movies like Shanghai Noon and all these great movies that he did. And then I also remember as a kid, there was a cartoon. They had the Jackie Chan Adventures cartoon. That thing ran for 5 freaking years, I think.
You know,
he voiced himself. So as a kid, I got to watch him in movies and they did a cartoon about him. And as I said, like, I love cartoons, especially when I was a kid. So that was like, oh, this is amazing.
Absolutely. Because as I said before, I mean, he joins the list of people who add their own persona to a cartoon of themselves. And then I'll even build on that a bit. I really dig how he would even go back and do the English dub of his various movies, much like how we talked about Banderas. International dub, he's also doing the dub of it for, you know, and adding kind of to his net worth and value. Is like, okay, I can translate in another, you know, my native tongue as well as the English dub.
Yep.
And it just also shows people that you're dedicated to actually making this be a better, you know, version of the movie if you're going back and...
Mm-hmm. Because it truly is like you really do see it when someone loves what they do. Like when you put so much of his life, like this is his life. Just doing this style and doing his style and not caring what people know, you shouldn't do that. You're like, I'm going to do it anyway. And look what happened.
Yeah. Acting is your brand. And you got to care sometimes how even call people out on social media. Anytime we see someone who doesn't like a version of their movie, we know who's going to respond versus who isn't. You know, like someone like Stallone or even Alec Baldwin will definitely let you know who goofed up in terms of the distribution or editing. And there's other people who they'll stay silent on it for years. And I'm like, really? Why?
Yeah. It's like, let's not show them the lead bury because pretty soon no one's going to care.
Right. And it's like, you might want to avert the damage.
What's funny is, you know, I'm starting to think about just Jackie Chan movies from the 90s that I really like. Another movie I loved that was really kind of underrated of his, but I just love the creativity behind it, was Twin Dragons.
Yeah.
You remember that movie?
Because that was around the time, where everybody had to be fighting a clone of themselves, you know. And
It made
everyone's career in terms of visual effects and different types of comedy now and buddy movies. So that one I've actually been meaning to rewatch. I think the reason I tuned out is because I think the English version of it wasn't too, it was kind of shabby. So I'd be interested to see.
My dad and I, he was the one who would always watch martial arts movies with me, but my mom would always love watching Jackie Chan movies with us she also loved, and she always made sure to point this out, which I appreciated, you know, because he's known for his martial arts so much, but he's so freaking funny.
He really is.
He's so funny, man. Like, there are not a lot of movie scenes that I've watched that it's, especially with a movie, like an action type movie where all these action scenes and things are happening, like those kind of action movies where I'm just like belly laughing, especially when he's drunk in movies. Like in Shanghai Noon, dude, with the bathtub scene, and then he's like, you know, he's like, "What happened to my horse? Is he dead?" Like, that line kills me every time.
Right. And he does have a way of just reacting to everyone in the movie without kind of overshadowing everything.
Yep, absolutely. Well, he even has his own sound effect. I've always, you know, pointed that out. But when he fight, like, you could blindfold somebody and just put on, you can take out all the sound effects and everything and just put out the actual sounds of the fight, you would know it's Jackie Chan, because everybody seems to have their own kind of style of sound effect they make when they would do these fight scenes. But of course, Bruce Lee was famous for what? He was famous for,
yeah.
Like, that's what he would do. Jackie Chan, on the other hand, I did martial arts for a long time, and I still every once in a while try to practice and see if I can still do it. But when you punch, you go like, you exhale, like you to put more power into your punch, you go like that. But you hear him in his videos, in his movies, because he's doing these stunts himself. That's the other part that is well known about him, is he always does his own stunts. But his tone that he uses on fight scenes is famously, for me, what's really recognizable is that, you know, like he makes those sound effects. But I almost feel like they're cues when he's fighting. I've wondered this. I've never, like, this is just a thought I've had. I wonder if when he films his fight scenes, that's when he cues people to move. You know?
Like,
like, that's his block, and it's like, go to the next move. I've always wondered if that's how he makes his, like, that's how he times the fight scenes, you know?
And people forget that that's part of the staging, and as we've said before, in so many of the superhero movies, The Dark Knight Rises is a big offender, where it's just like, it's just so over choreographed where they might as well have done it in one take.
Yeah, because, like, I remember watching that movie with friends who hadn't seen it yet. Like, at least two of them were like, "Shoot him! Eight of you are around him with guns. Just one of you shoot him!" Like that, they just kept yelling it while he's going from gun to gun and slowly. Like, yeah, it was pretty bad.
To make it even worse, I mean. How about the fact that people get shot and they're not bleeding? Is like, they should be bleeding about now.
Yeah, yep. Last time I checked.
Last time I checked, that's a thing. Even in PG-13, you can bleed, and yet it's just like, they're afraid. Oh, I can't show it. It's like, well, you lose points for me.
Yeah, right. And you know, that makes sense with Bane punching a concrete wall apart, that he doesn't have any bloody knuckles or anything.
Something, dude. I mean, if you aren't going to freaking, if you're not going to bleed, then do something else. Like, just cut away so I don't have time to say, hey, you know.
I'm not buying it. Yeah.
Why is there no hole in their chest? You know, something. Yeah. Don't. And.
But that's what I love about Jackie Chan is that if you see blood, it's probably his.
It's probably real, too. Yeah.
And, yeah, that's what I mean.
And like you say before, I mean, I get even more annoyed when.
Sorry.
Jackie Chan's calling us saying, don't talk about this.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I mean, whenever I work on an independent film, I basically always say, what can we afford to film and what can we not film? Because let's do it right. And so often, so many people, like, they'll learn the hard way. They'll even waste other. I was working with some douchebags who basically wasted everyone's time. It's like, I don't like how that looks. It's like, well, you might as well use it now because you're wasting everyone's time.
Yeah.
And
you've
had so much time to prep with this. Look at what the artist is capable of. Give them enough time. And it's like, as so many people just seem to think it's easy. And it's like, no, it's not easy. You got to plan this.
He shot the final. I think there was a final fight scene in Police Story that they shot over 2,000 times to get the shot.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't have a choice. He knew what value it was and how these, you know, drive-ins worked on the amount of violent and even in some cases sexual content of some of these movies. So it was just like, and with this case especially, I mean, people will always tease. I love how when you see the knife being thrown in a movie, how it always lands is like, yeah, well, give them credit for how they had to even make it work, you know. So if you've seen a movie a bunch of times, obviously you're gonna. I get so annoyed when I see people again teasing at how people in the stadium and movies like Gladiator clearly aren't from that period. It's like, because you've had time to avert your eyes to something that wasn't meant to be looked at, you know? And so the Blu-ray, well, you're going to see plenty of stuff you're not supposed to see, but I mean, give them credit. If I see a bullet hole already there before, you know, someone's fired a gun, that's okay. You know, it's just, if we didn't see that originally, but now we did, but that's all they had to work with, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I forget the director's name, but he said you do what you can to get the shot or something along those lines.
Any of those kind of people. Because, I mean, you got an editor, you got, again, the stunt coordinator who, in some cases, they may be even working with some person who doesn't know how that works. They're just used to editing music videos or, violent movies in general.
And what else would I love that he does in all his movies, especially ones like Shanghai, but he has those bloopers in the credits. So you see like him getting stuck, or you see some of the stunts going wrong, or, you know, he like how like certain props will break and things like that. Like, more or less, it's just like a blooper reel showing you, this is dangerous stuff, you know?
Absolutely. As I was talking in an episode before, I mean, Walter Hill and Antoine Fuqua seem to be some of the few people who know how to, even Scorsese and Spielberg in some instances, whereas like they know how to get the acting and the story and the action actually to entertain all the crowds, because they know how to stay in their department, let alone supervise other people and be on their same page, speak their language. And Jackie didn't always have that luxury, but he always made the best of it by even, he would always improvise a scene and it would always make the blooper reel. So like you say, you could be begged to watching one of his movies or just suffering through his movie. Was like, it's all going to be worth it because at the end he's going to have an incredible blooper reel.
Oh yeah. Because that movies movies that really aren't that great, but I enjoy, like The Medallion or The Tuxedo and those ones.
Yeah.
2000s and stuff. No, they're not Oscar winners, but they're fun. But those blooper reels at the end, you're like, this is so fantastic. This is, you know, they even, you forget that you saw a movie that, you know, might not have been as good as it should have been, but these bloopers just seem to make up for it, you know?
Totally.
I'm so happy that they finally gave him, they gave him that honorary Oscar, man.
You know, it's deserved. Because, well, I mean...
Sure, man. He's got a Hollywood star and a friggin' Hollywood star in China as well. You know, he's... The amount of money he's brought to Hollywood, but also the amount of... amount that he's done on a charity standpoint, you know, he's just... it's more than is like, you know, it should have happened 10, 20 years ago almost, but, you know... It
totally should have, yeah.
That they recognize him, you know?
And it gets very annoying when you're having to remind people, it's like, these people have been around for years, so...
Yeah. Well, think about it. I mean, in the early 80s and, like, late 70s, he was already having injuries, like a broken hip and a broken femur from doing stunts and stuff. And, you know, and the... It was like, what is it? Hawk and the... Snake and the Eagle Shadow, I think.
I think so. He yeah, got injured first
for that. That was his first big international, like, this is Jackie Chan. And then he did Drunken Master, and then everybody was like, okay, this guy is awesome. But in that movie, he knocked out a tooth doing a stunt, you know. And this was just when he was getting started. He already had, like, some really busted up parts of him. And, you know, he just keeps going, man. He's like Wolverine. He runs back and... Eagles after like 2 weeks and, you know, meditates and probably drinks some green tea that he hiked up to the top of the highest peak in China and, you know, whatever other mythical things he does to still look like he does at, you know, 65 or however old he is. And still
that's a good point. Yeah, well, and you would hope people would actually be watching his movies and studying them, you know. Why does it gel? Why does it appeal? You know.
I also love that with his scenes, you never have the shaky camera problem.
Yeah,
that's freaking like Bourne Identity. Don't get me wrong; those movies are great, but the Bourne Identity, like, and I'm like, is this guy like running with the camera around on a necklace or something? This is ridiculous. I'm trying to watch,
and that. And that's just it. That was my issue with some of Nolan. He kind of aped that style, and it's like, I like the ending of Begins. I like Dark Knight, but I can't see any of the action no matter how hard I try. So, yeah, I mean, even Steven Soderbergh was like, when he did Haywire, he was like, I'm trying to not imitate Bourne. It's like, well, you look like Bourne, even though you also look like a 70s movie, which is what you were going for. So it's like, everybody doesn't necessarily know what they're looking for, let alone what kind of style they like. And It's funny, people I know who have problems with all those movies we've just mentioned like the Mission Impossibles, and it's like, well, some of the lesser Mission Impossibles do have some shaky moments where it's like, come on.
Oh yeah. Excuse me. Like I remember the second Mission Impossible, some of that stuff was like, could you at least so try to make it look like it wasn't wires?
Right. And at that time, basically, that's kind of, I think, the issue. Ever since the 2000s, is like everybody didn't know what they did or did not like, because you didn't know until you actually bothered sitting through all these movies, you know, what style you preferred. Because at that time, critics already didn't like action movies, so it was hard to say whether we would like it. And it just, there was always just something about it that wouldn't completely transfer over, or someone did a different edit for the US versus internationally, or even for the UK. The UK was even worse, because they would take out any shots that had certain weapons, like nunchucks. So it's like,
yeah, because crime's going great over there. Everything's just a stab here and a stab there.
Yeah. No one overrunning the Capitol. Yeah, no problems.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God. Anyway. Toxic. So, yeah, I mean, there are some... It's kind of like when you see certain movies edited for TV. It's like, just don't even bother. It's not going to make sense.
One of my favorite lines from the recent Simpsons was Krusty. But for some reason, I don't even remember the episode, because just this one line's burned into my mind. But Krusty's about to pull a cannon and shoot it, and for some reason he goes, remember, kids, TV violence is okay as long as you don't show a nipple.
Right. There's always that moment where it's like, okay, you're okay with this, but not that?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah, like The Walking Dead, where like, We can't see a woman topless. We can watch you guys beat a zombie's face in with a hammer. Okay. that makes sense. Yeah, and that's what but that's the thing is, like, we would never have this talk about a Jackie Chan movie because everything he does is, like, I mean, you go through the weapons that he used. I think Harold Lloyd, I believe, was his influence. And Harold Lloyd, for whoever listens to this podcast, for those of you who don't know, like, his stunts for the time that he did them, him and, like, Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin, but particularly Harold Lloyd, how freaking dangerous and insane those stunts were for him to do that in the time period of film that it was that guy had balls bigger than this table that the computer's on, and they're probably made of solid adamantium. Like, think about the time period that he's doing these stunts, and that's what inspired Jackie Chan to do these stunts in an action movie way, but it's also has this comedic vibe to it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Jackie just kind of also just, I mean, even though he is clearly inspired by Lloyd and Chaplin and Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
He kind of also has kind of that rowdy, you know, very accessible goofiness, Warner Brothers cartoon or any of the Marx Brothers. He's so snappy.
Yeah, well, that, and he just gives off a vibe of just like an approachable person. Like, he's just a likable person. And that's really something that, because what it is it's something that's it seems harder and harder to find, at least I think these days. But when you do find it, it's so glaringly obvious, and it's simply authenticity. And that's what Jackie Chan reeks of, you know?
Yeah. Even when he's like, not even doing a stunt, like you say, he feels like he belongs in the scene.
Yeah. That's why I liked the Karate Kid remake so much, was so people could because people were able to see he can act. That guy really can act, and he was given the opportunity to show that in the Karate Kid. Did it give me the nostalgia and all that jazz of what the original Karate did? Of course not. But I just like the fact that they gave Jackie Chan more of a window to act instead of just do his normal film routine.
Right. I mean, more or less. I mean, I even had a pal who went to the a Dallas premiere, which he was visiting, and said, again, you know, just he's even more genuine in person than, you know, what only certain, you know, talk show interviews can even show. I mean, it's even just, you gotta just meet him in person if you ever get a chance. He's that kind of guy.
Well, I think I probably like, here's you, Jackie, and then faint. So, because I really don't get starstruck or anything. I've gotten lucky enough to just happen to bump into a few celebrities in my time, but they're people, you know, they really are just people doing their job. And the fact that, you know, they're doing this and that you recognize them, but you got to remember, like, you know, their character, you don't know that person. And there's, you know, there's so much more layers than that, but he's one of those people who ever since I was a child, man, I've just like looked up to him on the sense of what he was like. It's like I said, like when we started this whole thing, he was like a superhero to me. You know, he was like this real life action superhero martial artist who, you know, is, you know, I was bullied when I was a kid. So it always gave me this thought of, you know, you can always defend yourself against multiple people, or you can always find a way to get out of a situation. Or, you know, he really made you believe in doing things, you know, and you would really inspire you. You know, like I said, I love martial arts, and every time I watch a Jackie Chan movie, I want to get more into martial arts and get better. And I like all that connection. Like, that's why if I were to meet him, I'd just be like, I would probably just be like, you, that's a lot growing me, watch you, you know, I would probably not be, in a presentable position.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he can even really do any wrong at this point. 'Cause I mean, more or less, he's gonna basically require, I mean, you gotta just introduce all your cousins and nephews and nieces to it. You gotta just say, hey, you know, I don't care if you are or aren't allowed to watch these movies. You have to. Yeah. I mean, you owe it to yourself. You'll basically, I mean, you're going to see them one way or the other anyway, so you might as well, because, I mean, these have generally most of what many of us are looking for. It's even interesting seeing which of the ones that didn't do as hot with every crowd that also vary by crowd, like Mr. Nice Guy and even some of the later Police stories. I personally, I can watch Super Cop all day. I'd just love
it. Me too. Like Super Cop and...
the rest of us, that's Police Story free, but that's, you know, it's just... dynamite. Him and Michelle Yeoh have perfect charisma together.
Michelle Yeoh, man, that woman, that's a whole nother podcast I'd love to talk about. She is amazing, that woman.
Yeah, very underused dramatic actress, and everyone's talking about her recent awards that she's been receiving. I'm like, I've known she's been awesome for years. What are you talking about?
Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, like, I mean, I think she was, which James Bond was she in?
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Thank you.
That was she's definitely one of my favorite Bond girls, because she...
Oh, hands down. She was... Oh, I loved her in that one. I had the biggest freaking crush on her, dude. I was like, man, she kicks butt and she's gorgeous. Sign me up.
Right. I mean, and it just shows you how backwards some parts of the world are. It's just like, really?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I even remember some... when... I think people were joking about what a female Expendables would look like, and I put her name in the hat, and someone was like, she's too old. I'm like, no.
Excuse me.
Fuck no, she is not. No.
Oh, yeah, I bet Stallone was too old when he did.
Yeah, right?
Like, that dude broke his neck doing that movie. So, don't tell me about age. That's horse crap. Mm-hmm. Like, if they want to do it, they're going to do it better than pretty much anybody. So,
old is 90. These people are not 90.
Yeah. Well, that's how, like, you look, culturally speaking, most people who are Asian or of Asian descent, they don't look old until they're, like, 90, you know, because they just take care of themselves so well. That's why Jackie Chan can still do most of his stunts, because their approach to life and their, you know, their focus on their diet and doing Tai Chi every day as part of, like, going out and getting exercise. And it really is a big part of their, I guess, flow, as would be a way to put it.
Right. I mean, everyone has their formula. Everyone's going to have an element of their actual persona that goes in with their on-screen persona. And I mean, as I was even saying in some of these movies before, I like, Jackie is definitely the kind of guy, when he's even made unexpected cameos, like in Burn Hollywood Burn as himself, it's been hysterical.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, no way.
And then you realize he already kind of had the international appeal rooted deeper than that, you know, with Cannonball Run 2 and other wacky appearances. Yeah. He's used to being part of an ensemble. He is a giving person.
Another movie that I think, you know, you mentioned the production and stuff like that being on the downside, but you watch it because it's Jackie Chan, is that one, The Forbidden Kingdom. Like, you get to watch Jackie Chan and Jet Li have a fight scene.
Absolutely. It was, and they're both playing a version of their, you know, Once Upon a Time in China was based on the same historical legend as Drunken Master. So it was cool seeing them do a throwback to both those movies and that kind of...
Yeah.
Fantasy version of that dynasty.
And they had they brought on both of them. Were like, can we get that the guy, the fight choreographer for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? I believe was behind that one too.
I think.
And they kind of came up with this. They came up with it, and according to both Jackie Chan and Jet Li, they watched it once. They kind of went through, and they go, "Okay, film." They're like, "What?" They're like, yeah, go ahead and film. Like, you guys know it already? Like, yeah.
And
they had to tell them to slow down because they were going so fast that the camera couldn't catch them.
Right. And it doesn't matter how many times you do it. It's the same story every time. It's like, what camera rate are we going at? Are we going at, you know, 60 frames per second? You know, it's just...
Well, there is a famous one of those, you know, the man himself, Bruce Lee, those famous, you know, you're like, is this true or is this more like a myth or something? Like, but this one's actually true, which was, I believe it was Enter the Dragon. He was doing a scene where they kept seeing a blur on the screen. And they go, they kept reshooting and they thought there was something wrong with the camera until someone said, slow it down. And they slowed it down to slow motion. The reason why it was a blur wasn't because it was the camera. Bruce Lee was throwing three punches in a scene where it looked more like one. He wasn't throwing one, he was throwing three. And it was going so fast that it was blurring on the camera. These are that's the other thing that people, I hope, realize is like, these aren't actors who just do martial arts for movies. Like, they
in
are
the gym for 2 months. Martial artists. Yeah.
This is their, this is not their, acting is their job. This is their life.
Absolutely. This is their life.
Mm-hmm. And like having that life of a martial artist also includes self-health and, you know, mental health and, you know, mind and body as one. And that's always been an approach. And having that approach to life really does give you this, you know, ability to heal better, this ability to have a long career, this ability to be able to mentally handle everything that comes with what he does.
Right. I mean, it comes with the territory and then it's trial and error. It's not, well, we choreographed it, it should work. It's like, it doesn't matter how much you choreograph it. It's also a matter of, you know, how much time do you have to film? And I always try to think.
Yeah, and also making sure it works.
Make sure it even needs to be there. You know, if you've been you've had this much time to choreograph it, you know already whether it does or doesn't work. I think it's even a testament to people who just keep on going and find the rhythm, find the balance, and before you get to the editing room. And so, as we've said before, Jackie is just going to be influential for many reasons, let alone
just for the audiences who have seen him. There's the amount that he does that you don't see is hard to grasp. It really is.
Welcoming aboard, this will be a transition in between commercial breaks. We got Jonathan Mark.
Hello. All
right. So,
Jonathan.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm gonna let you start out with just a few different Jackie films that are just must-sees, since we've kind of covered the basis of how we got into it.
For me, must-sees are, if you really want to know what put Jackie Chan on the map, start off with Drunken Master and Drunken Master 2. Watch those films to get a feel of what true, like, peak in China, full free reign Jackie Chan is Drunken Master and Drunken Master 2. To get of how he was when he first got to America, you gotta watch Rumble in the Bronx, and then of course Rush Hour, specifically the first one, is really important. And of course the other one that you gotta watch is Shanghai Noon and Shanghai Nights.
Oh yeah.
Hmm.
You know, for those people who are just wondering what movies out there to watch about Jackie Chan, and of course if you want to see just the movies for stunt work purposes, in the sense of just how insane they are, it's a Police Story.
Hell, as we're talking, Oin on the Action Elite, the site that Jonathan and I blog at, the admin just shared a retro ad for TBS for guys who like movies featuring Jackie Chan. And so, just like this was not intended to even be recorded on his birthday, I didn't even know when I did the schedule. I just, you know, I scheduled it all based on who was available and what days. So I was like, that's wild that, that it happens this way. I think he does have that kind of, the movies you illustrate, I think, are definitely the best way to start out. I would also argue that Who Am I? I think is worth watching just because how he handles the various tones in that movie.
Yeah.
Spy elements.
The Foreigner, too, if you want to watch another recent movie of his where he's serious. The Foreigner is a very good movie.
It really did deliver. Underrated. And made up for a lot of his movies that didn't get seen by as many. I know many liked Little Big Soldier. I personally would recommend this one obscure war movie he did that not many saw, because it was just so unusual seeing him mix in his martial arts with actual war combat.
And yeah, that doesn't sound like him. Then the other thing too was he said he'd never play a bad guy, was another thing that he forever would say, that he would not want to play a villain or a bad guy.
Really?
Yeah, until very, I think very recently he played a villain, but he would never do. And when he got to America, he would always normally want his movies to be PG-13 so he could have a broader audience to watch. That's another big reason as to why a lot of his, I mean, when you watch his fight scenes in the earlier movies that he did, like Police Story, and even ones like the one I mentioned in Twin Dragons, and then Armor of God was another one. And
those are definitely essentials. Forbidden Kingdom. 1911 is the one I'm thinking of. I thought he did pretty badass in that one. Definitely. He kind of got wasted in Robbie Hood, and he's the star in that, let alone.
How about that one?
And I know Chinese Zodiac and Skip Trace and Bleeding Steel are all getting lampooned. I kind of want to see the new one he just did with his Police Story director Stanley Tong called Vanguard.
That just wasn't bad.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, that one at least looked like it was just dynamite. He has a brief cameo even in this awesome Hong Kong fire movie called As the Lights Goes Out. And I thought I was just seeing, you know, things when I saw that. But he's in Shaolin in The Spy Next Door. You're either going to like or hate those movies, but I definitely would recommend. God, I can't speak today. Out of all the recent movies he did, Dragonblade, I thought was a pretty cool movie.
Dragonblade. Oh, yeah. He did that in, like, 2015, I think.
Yeah, fell under the radar.
Yeah, that was when did he? Yeah, that I remember that movie now that I'm freaking thinking about it. It was like way back, like it was like in like 50 BC or something like that. yeah, I remember that movie now that I'm thinking. Yeah, that movie I really enjoyed now that I'm thinking about it. I think it was one of those where, 2015. I just graduated college and I was in Gainesville, so I was probably making poor decisions there. And I was probably, you know, not watching as well as I should have. But now I want to go back and watch that movie.
All good. I mean, it was definitely during the time where he was kind of, the market was oversaturated with all these other different kind of formulas. So any movies that he did, you know, weren't as widely available still, and unless you went for Yes Asia or whatever and ordered the expensive Blu-rays.
Yeah.
I would always keep up for them because there was always Hong Kong reviewing sites, and that was just a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I've actually seen a couple of those. They're actually very informative, like surprisingly so. That's why I kind of stumbled on one by accident, and then I'm like, I'm getting a lot more out of this than I thought. And thankfully, they normally have pages where they can translate everything, too.
Right.
So that's kind of nice. But I got to get going, gentlemen.
Okie dokie. It was great having you on the show. And
hey, man. Thanks for having me, Cam. It was an awesome, awesome time chatting about it. And I'll see you next week.
You got it, brother. Okay. Yes. See you there.
There we go.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And so backtrack a bit with you, John. What was your intro to Jackie as a whole? Did you see any of his Hong Kong stuff, or was it more of his American movies?
It was really Rush Hour that started me with Jackie. Okay. And then I gradually went to his Hong Kong stuff later on when I finally got a chance to watch him.
For sure. I mean, Drunken Master 2, as I've said before, is one I've just watched multiple times anytime it's on Spike TV or what have you when it was on, when it was a thing. Because I thought, you know, it really did have an unusual kind of appeal. It was just so awesome how it just flowed.
Well, it was that one, and the one that really got me into his Hong Kong stuff was Jackie Chan's First Strike.
And yeah.
Rumble in the Bronx. That's the other two that I really started to get into his work.
Totally. And yeah, Rumble in the Bronx just came at the right time where it just, even though the Hong Kong version makes better sense, you see how the cops are dirty and that's why no one's doing anything in New York. And it did have a fun kind of just relatability to it. That's what made it stand out from the typical kind of, you know, Roadhouse or Die Hard type action fest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can get past, you know, the dubbing, which the American version, which
it did have some,
it's funny to hear, but sometimes
they all sound very bizarre.
Yeah, especially with Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
If I dub him with somebody else, it's very awkward. But now, like our guest mentioned before, but the Foreigner, that's the one that I know a lot of people talk about the trailer, because
I didn't see the actual movie.
Yeah, because the trailer makes it look like it's him, his version of Taken, but yet it's more of a political thriller.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier, when I saw it, I called it Patriot Games meets Taken, because it's totally addressing all the IRA terrorism that's still going on. And it was cool seeing Pierce Brosnan as an opposing hero, a bureaucrat who's trying to stop him from what he's doing, and who understands what he's going through, but actually laying on his thick Irish accent. And it was a cool James Bond reunion, because, you know, Martin Campbell of GoldenEye Casino Royale fame was working on it. And, you know, he's used to kind of gritty revenge movies like, you know, Mask of Zorro and both versions of Edge of Darkness. So,
that's true.
He did both the miniseries and the Mel Gibson movie version. So it's like,
I even know the miniseries. That's interesting to know.
Yeah. I mean, he was familiar with it. And like you say, I mean, it's interesting how again, we've seen Jackie be serious in between, you know, the comedy and other stuff. But yeah, this one, he even did a serious dramatic music video for the China market. So it's just like, did you ever follow any of Jackie Chan adventures or even his brief PlayStation 1 video game?
I think I did at a time, but it's been such a long time since I've actually played those or have followed those over the years. So.
All right, all good. I mean,
exactly.
It didn't help that they weren't all necessarily available. I think, let me see, is it all available on DVD now? I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can stream it on certain sites, but let's see. Jackie Chan Adventures. Kids WB, yeah.
Oh, I did watch that show. I remember that clearly now. Yep. It's been such a long time. God.
Yeah, that's right. So they did like free episodes that were released by Sony on VHS. And then, okay. And then finally, in 2012, they did a manufactured on demand for season two. But the season one still didn't get a region one release. Jeez.
I'm not surprised at this point.
It's just like. Oh, well.
Oh, it's funny. I should mention the movie that I actually saw in the theaters, which is my first one with him. And it's what I like to call probably his most forgettable movie, which is the remake of Around the World in 80 Days.
That's right. So he's done two movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Arnold has just the most unusual hair in that, in his brief cameo.
I know. I remember just being surprised seeing him show up. Like, oh, look, it's Arnold. That's it? Okay.
I still want to see this awful Russian movie he's apparently done, just because I'm just like, it just looks like a hysterical antenna channel type movie you would normally see.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm sure there's absolutely no entertainment value otherwise.
That's so true. But I'm still curious about the one that Jackie did with John Cena, which was supposed to be with Stallone at one point, which I know all of us would have preferred Stallone.
Was surprised. He was supposed to be in like one of the Expendables movies, and it just never worked out. His schedule, the story, not that there had to be a story, and just filming it just always went to shit every time. Every time they were doing one of the sequels, they always were just like, we're going to get him, we're going to get him. We don't got him. It's like, get him.
In, both of them that try to be in there, and something happened.
Even though they filmed in like part of China for like part two to accommodate Jet Li's schedule, it still didn't work out.
Yeah.
Like, then just kick Jet Li and film Jackie and Donnie.
Somewhat disappointing that seeing them in there. Donnie or Jackie Chan even.
Yeah, because I mean, Jet just didn't seem to care in any of the movies. No offense. He just...
Part one, but not so much the sequels.
Yeah, part one, he had some good lines. Then part two, he disappears before even the end of act one. And act three, it's really only just as a funny cameo role with him and Arnold being in love. That's it. I didn't go for any of his action because none of it stands out there. So it's like, I'm going to see Dolph in a tank and all these other guys.
And Dolph saying he wants Chinese food. That's what you go for.
Right. And I'm still waiting for them to add Pierce Brosnan to the cast, because I know he works with Abby Lerner and a lot of those New Image Millennium Films type productions. So it's like, please get him on there. Make him do a funny send up of Remington Stone.
I feel like they were going to get him. Like, Brosnan actually said that he was off of the role, I think, for the fourth one, if they ever do it, hopefully.
Yeah, he just flat out said, just like, let's talk money, let's do it. He knows what it is.
I'm all for it. Go for it, guys. Come on.
It should not be hard. Right. Or just call a spade. Yeah, Stallone's ego's too hard. He's not getting along with the producer. It's not happening. Okay, then call it that.
Exactly.
Or better yet, do it without Stallone and give it to all the rest of them.
Let Statham be the lead for once.
Let Statham, who seems to, unlike The Rock and Vin Diesel, be willing to do a pay cut and be okay doing it for $10,000 a movie or whatever. And it's like, do that and get a Rock cameo. And if you can't, then yes, get all these other guys and get Jackie Chan and... Yeah, Dolph can be the second wingman.
Exactly.
Whatever. So, that's good to know that that recent movie, Vanguard, was a lot of fun. I wanted to see it. I just didn't see it yet.
Well, because the action was the best part. Because if you try and go for the story, you're going to be able to explode. But
well, as long as they don't bore you.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even the poster alone looks like a lot of the movies they did with the Young and Dangerous cast, where it's a send-up of all those Hong Kong crime movies, as well as, you know, cop and robber movie films.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wouldn't have expected much, as long as it's not boring or the action isn't as poorly drawn out, you know, and then just entertain.
That's what it is. I mean, if you can just get past the CG lion, you see one scene, but
oh, God.
That's like the only bad thing I would say. Which was a good thing. It's only in there for about 10 minutes, so we're good there. We're good there, so
perfect. Alrighty, well, any other recommendations for how people should try getting into some of his movies?
I mentioned First Strike is definitely one I think people should check out. Along with Rumble in the Bronx, I'd say Mr. Nice Guy is one people should check out.
Perfect.
Even if it's not one of his best ones, it's still entertaining enough for people to watch. And I think that's about it for all the ones I can recommend.
Yeah, I mean, Operation Condor is also known as Armor of God, but definitely watch either version of it. You're not going to have much interference on those prints, not much cuts made to either version. Yeah, Project A, easy to get into. I mean, might even be more agreeable for, you know, your uncles or other family members who've been watching Jackie and Chan since, you know, he was first, you know, on all the movie channels and drive-in theaters, you know, just... And it'll have as much of the same stunts as you're looking for as some is American stuff. Obviously, I'm going to avoid, you know, the tuxedo and...
Oh, yeah, avoid that.
Because, I mean, that was when they would over-edit the trailers and no one knew what they were really for. They were too kiddish, but even the kids were outgrown of his stuff by then, by that point. Mm-hmm. And if you watched it, you wouldn't even remember it. Even renting it, it just was that stupid. And you know, Rush Hour Free, watch the bloopers, don't watch the movie.
I know, I don't mind the movie, but it's not,
it was watchable, but it was pretty lazy.
The first two were definitely better.
Yeah. Shanghai Noon and Nights, I think, are the better ones out of his Hong Kong ones, because I mean, Rush Hour, I think the issue is the plot isn't what makes the movie. It's him and Chris Tucker's, and it's like, I legit love how they in Shanghai Noon, how they make fun of everything from Kung Fu to, you know, the TV show with Carradine to, you know, Butch Cassidy.
I'm gonna have to go back and look at those. I remember not caring for Shanghai Nights as much.
Nights, I think its issue is some of the supporting characters like Lucy Liu. It would have been made a big difference if they had brought them back, but at the same time, I mean, I really dug Donnie Yen as the bad guy in that. Would I say it's his best? No. out of all his American collaborations, I would definitely say that's his better one.
True.
Some of the British add-ons to it were kind of interesting, even though there were some annoying edits. But yeah, other than that, I mean, everyone's going to check out his stuff anyway, so I mean, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Which they should.
I mean, you know him in some fashion, but you owe it to actually see some of his material.
Mm-hmm.
So, with further ado, what are you working on next?
Well, I'll be writing my review for Merchant of Death with Michael Pirelli very soon. So, look out for that.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jack